Okay, good afternoon, and welcome to another Torn Motion panel discussion. I'm Dr. Elliot Malamut. There is a tendency, especially in the diaspora, for people to view religion and religious observance in the land of Israel in fairly binary black and white terms, i.e. that, you know, Israelis are either secular or religious, or that Israel is losing its sense of Jewish identity, or that Haredim and secular Israelis live in two different universes, and so on. But yet, a study that was carried out by the Gutman Center of the Israel Democracy Institute, which was conducted on behalf of the Avichai Fund, and was just released this year at the beginning of 2012, polled thousands of Israelis in the past several years and discovered that the number of Israeli Jews who believe in God and practice a religious lifestyle is actually on the upswing. For instance, 80% of Israeli Jews polled believe in God. The poll showed that 77% of Israeli Jews believe in a divine power that guides the world. 72% believe that prayer has the power to improve their lives. 2/3 of them believe that Jews are the chosen people. And 65% believe that the Torah and its commandments are of divine origin. In addition, 34% believe that Jews who do not observe the Torah are endangering their fellow Jews and Israelis. The poll also showed a marked change in the number of Israeli Jews who consider themselves religious or observant. In the latest study, 15% consider themselves dati, compared to 11% in 1999. 7% said they were Haredi, compared to 5% in the previous study. The number of Masorati remained relatively stable, and there was a slight decline in those Israelis self-defined as Chiloni or secular. And to complicate matters further, a recent study done by Macomb indicates that there are 12,000 internet connections that have been set up in the Haredi enclave of Mea Shearim. So the subject of how Israelis feel about religion and how secular and religious communities coexist is, like everything else in the state of Israel, a complicated matter. It's my pleasure to introduce to you our speakers for this panel. To my immediate left, Rabbi Francis Nataf, a Jerusalem-based educator and thinker. He's the author of two books of contemporary Torah commentary called Redeeming Relevance, which are on sale outside. They're well worth reading, as well as numerous articles on Bible, Jewish thought, and education. He was the director of Jewish studies at the Pre-Collegiate Learning Center of New Jersey, and he's now working on a book of Jewish political thought. To my immediate right, Dr. David Chazoni, whose first book, The Ten Commandments, How Our Most Ancient Moral Texts Can Ruin Modern Life, was a finalist for the National Jewish Book Award. His writings have appeared in many publications, a few among them including The New Republic, The Forward, Commentary, Moment, The Jerusalem Post, and so on. And from 2004 to 2007, Dr. Chazoni served as editor-in-chief of Azur, Israel's leading journal of public affairs. His PhD is in Jewish philosophy from the Hebrew University, where he focused his research on the thought of Eliezer Berkowitz, and after this session, he'll be delivering a talk on Professor Berkowitz in our final sessions of the day. And finally, Rabbi Nathan Lopez Cardozo, who was educated in Amsterdam and ordained at Gateshead in northern England. He's the dean of the David Cardozo Academy in Jerusalem, is the author of many books, as well as articles which have been published in various newspapers in Israel and abroad. Those of you here this morning know that Rabbi Cardozo is a creative and bold thinker, and he travels extensively throughout the world to lecture on Judaism and Israel, and his mission is to attempt to spiritually re-enhance and reinvigorate the Jewish people. Please welcome our panel. Gentlemen, I'd like to begin by asking each of you, and we'll start with Rabbi Nataf and move left to right, each of you to sketch briefly what you see as the crucial issues today in terms of the religious identity of Israel and the relationships between Israelis over the matter of religion, to indicate essentially what you see as the central problems and what you believe are some of the solutions to those challenges.
How much time do I have? Okay, you raise very important and really broad questions. I feel like in a serious forum like this, we're dealing with very important issues that really deserve much more time. But on one foot, I'm just going to raise some issues, not necessarily what I see as the most important issues, but issues that concern me personally on an existential level that I think are central to what we're speaking about. Number one is what I call the religious leadership problem. Someone asked me today before in one of my talks, what do I consider a grand slam? The sort of power that we need to really save the day, so to speak, for contemporary Judaism. And I answered, we need someone like Rav Kook. For me, was able to address the zeitgeist in terms of reinterpreting, coming with new and original and creative understandings of Judaism that spoke to a large cross-section of Jews, which I think that cross-section is becoming more and more divided, such that it's very rare to find anyone who's addressing much more than his own or her own private group. We've dissolved into various cultures and subcultures so that each institution tends to be ignorant of anything else that's going on outside of its walls. So there's very little cross-fertilization, and all the more so across sections of society. I think one of the biggest problems that we face in Israel in terms of identity, in terms of the attraction of religiosity, is lack of exposure and this tremendous segregation, which I understand for religious communities on a sociological level may be necessary. Nonetheless, this, without some sort of other alternative ways besides living together to address this problem, I think the issue is catastrophic, such that many people in various cities in Israel have never met a religious person, all the more so connecting with one. I remember actually in Limud 2 years ago, sitting next to a Palestinian on a panel such as this and making the statements that, you know, we live very close together, but it was the first time in decades that I'd sat in discussion with a Palestinian. Unfortunately, that's very similar to what is experienced by many secular and religious Jews. Finally, just in terms of one other issue that is of concern to me, is lack of coherent thinking about Judaism and modernity. Again, it's something that's discussed a lot, but in terms of serious religious thinkers that are addressing the problems of modernity, I think it's not on the agenda of the greatest thinkers. And in places where it are, again, where this is a part of the agenda, I think there's a tremendous narrowness of vision, which ultimately will not have tremendous historical worth.
Thank you, Rabbi Netav, Dr. Netav. And thank you all for being here. I feel uncomfortable addressing this question. I feel like all of us panelists, and even the chair of the panel, is coming from within the religious world in one sense or another, when in fact the most interesting questions in Israel about religion are the ones that are addressed in the secular world. I think that, so if you'll allow me the arrogance of perhaps trying to step outside and maybe tackle the problem from the perspective of the secular Israeli, it might be a little bit helpful to illuminate the problem. There are three issues, three completely different questions that every secular Israeli faces in engaging with religion. One is the engagement with the institutions and figures of religion, the rabbis, the rabbinate, and the rabbinic authorities. Second, their personal engagement with the practices of Judaism. Do they light candles? What extent do they keep Shabbat? And third is their engagement with the texts and the ancient traditions of Judaism. And these three operate on totally different planes, very often without any relationship to each other, and very often can never really express themselves in the surveys that you address. So really, really quickly, I'm going to touch on all three. In terms of the rabbinate, I don't believe that there is any... I think that there's a very sharp disappointment with and animosity towards the institutions of the rabbinate. With the very clear and pointed exception of Rav Stav's organization, Tzohar, which is in Israel, among secular Israelis, seen as a unique and long-awaited opportunity to engage with Judaism without having to deal with the intolerable aspects of the rabbinate. But by and large, there's a hostility. There's a growing number of frequent flyer miles being accumulated on the Tel Aviv-Cyprus path. And nothing has gotten any better about it. It will, I believe, actually reach some kind of decisive breaking point, and there will be significant change. It's already beginning with the Supreme Court rulings regarding the drafting of ultra-Orthodox Jews, and I think it's going to continue. At the same time, at the level of engagement with texts and tradition, you have a remarkable increase on the part of many, many secular Jews. Just to take, you know, I happen to be a music fan, a popular music fan, so I follow Israeli popular music. And there's not one, but two entire movements of popular music engaging with religious texts. There's the semi-Baal Tshuva, but not quite, or sort of on the way, you know, stream, which is like the Eti Ankri, but also like the Banais and all of those. And then there's this other super secular stream that, you know, Efrat Gosh, where they're like, okay, one day I'm gonna do this, you know, totally risque, unrepeatable public performance and song, and the next day I'm gonna appear at a gathering where they're putting the medieval poetry of Yehuda Levi to music, and she's gonna be one of those too. And it's become completely legitimate. It's become an engagement that isn't exactly religious, it's more nationalistic, but this is our tradition. And the place it comes from, and this is crucial because it's so different from North America, it comes from a place that says, we seculars are not going to give up our collective tradition to those rabbis. Okay? We're going to stand up and reclaim our tradition for ourselves and interpret ourselves and make it a part of our lives. And the result is you get institutes such as Alma, headed by Ruth Calderon, you know, and she's a remarkable figure, but I've sat on a panel with her in which she got up and said, who's to tell me that I can't, you know, Friday night daven in an Orthodox shul, and then Saturday morning go to a Reform shul, and then, you know, in the afternoon just do whatever I want. This is my Judaism. I can do it as I will. The third area is, of course, practice, and that ends up flowing out of the attitudes. If I feel good about parts of Judaism, I might do more practices, I might engage more, but it's not going to be because the rabbis told me to do so.
Let me start with a story. A friend of mine, several years ago, walks around in Tel Aviv. In front of him walks a Israeli, long hair, earrings in his ears, and no kippah or anything like that, but his tzitzit are hanging out of his pockets. My friend walks up to him and says to him, "Ulai ataya cholas birate. Can you perhaps explain this to me? No kippah, long hair, everything secular, but your tzitzit are hanging out of your pockets." So he says, "I want you to know, there are thousands and thousands of us like this, where some of us have taken on a specific mitzvah. I did tzitzit, and also a friend of mine puts on tefillin once a week. Third one lights candles Friday night, a fourth one goes to shul. That's the way how we live our life." And then he said a remarkable thing: "And please don't interfere in our lives and tell us what to do." And this is very symptomatic, because what is happening in Israel's society, as far as I can see it, and I'm quite involved, and that is somewhere the other side of what Rabbi Tzav said this morning, and I agree with every point he made over there, is that indeed, like Elliot mentioned before, there is definitely an increase in some kind of observance and religiosity. I think the reasons are quite clear. Number one, most people today, or many people, Israelis today, they really are struggling with their Jewish identity. The reason why that is A, because Israel, being in such a very difficult position, makes them to wonder, what are we doing in this country? Why do we put our children in danger when they have to serve in the army? Or there is something higher and more meaningful to it. Otherwise, why not go to California or to any of the other places where life is much easier? Number two, they see that their children get involved in drugs, in crime, and other terrible things. The children have absolutely nowhere to go because they never got any kind of Jewish education. And therefore, they realize, the young parents start to realize that it's time that they do something about it before things get out of hand. Number two, I should also say that from my experience, many Israelis realize that some kind of religious Judaism is absolutely necessary for the existence of the State of Israel. That the State of Israel is not able ever to become a completely secular state. Later on, we will deal a little bit about this. And that people are, in fact, also looking for some religious experience on some level, and not just purely a cultural one. My academy, for several years, run a program in Ramat Aviv Gimel, which is the most secular part of Israel. And we manage there on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur to make special services for non-religious people who have absolutely nothing to do with Yahadut, with the Jewish tradition. Every year we had 1,000 people for Yom Kippur and about 400, 500 for Rosh Hashanah. We had a traditional service, but we did a lot of haspara, we did a lot of explanation. And the place was too small, and people were standing outside, and on the end, spontaneously out of the crowd, after Ne'ilah, everybody started to sing Hatikva, which was not included in the official service. And somehow it suddenly made them aware of the fact that, you know, we are Jews after all, and we want to stay Jews, however much we are removed from the Jewish tradition. But there is another side to this. What Elliot mentioned, what he spoke about, and that is that more people getting religiously inclined, to my great regret, it also goes hand in hand with some kind of radicalization. There is something which concerns me a lot. Perhaps this is too harsh a word to say, but sometimes within the religious world and also within these people who are moving in that direction, there is a kind of semi-racism taking place against non-Jews, against Arabs, and that is very unfortunate and very dangerous, and the rabbis are not doing anything whatsoever about it. Further, university professors are a big problem, and I'm saying this also, I'm very much part and very much proud of what is happening in the universities. It's great stuff, but there, the professors there, they write the books of Israel of tomorrow for our children and for our grandchildren. Most of these people have very little, if any, Jewish education themselves, and try to somehow get into that community of young people, telling them things which are definitely not true about the Jewish tradition. And it is extremely difficult to challenge them on it, because there's a certain arrogance there where they are not prepared to listen. And no doubt there are many exceptions to that rule, and that there are some very fine professors who have a very different way of looking to it. There is obviously also, indeed, because the Haredi community is so much growing, that indeed, as much mentioned before by Rabbi Tzav as well, therefore many people start to feel threatened by that community. And the last point which I want to make, which is a whole issue on itself, and I understand that one day we'll have a panel on that, and that is, in my opinion, everybody needs to serve in the army, including you. Because I think that today, any Jewish community in the world is to a very great extent depending on what is happening in Israel. And no doubt, nobody, obviously, up till a certain age, should be exempt from that, even when you live in Toronto.
I just want to follow up then with your first point and throw it open to everybody here. So your anecdote suggests that we should simply leave alone chilonim, or people who, shall we say, practice somewhat idiosyncratically. I'm wondering if we should just leave it at that. In other words, are we saying now that there's no constructive model for engaging more Israelis Jewishly. Are we, you know, so that would suggest that there's two solitudes, and I do my thing and they do their thing, and we say nothing to them. But I think from a Jewish point of view, perhaps we can go further and think about whether we need not simply resign to that person's statement, okay, I'm never going to talk to you, or can we do things that would be not coercive and not judgmental, but that would be constructive?
Definitely there is something to say, and definitely we should respond, but indeed not in a coercive way, which is the moment, indeed, the way how they will understand us. The moment we walk up to them with a kippah on their head, they are already feeling that they are getting coerced into something, and we need to create a different image about ourselves that they no longer have that kind of feeling. I think we have a lot to offer, but they have to be the ones also to initiate that kind of relationship, and I think they would be open to it, I'm actually quite sure about that, if we just would have a different policy in this matter, and we are at this moment still failing to do so, but as we heard this moment, Zohar is definitely an exception to that rule, and that's absolutely great.
My position is a little more radical, I think. I think that as soon as we're saying we and they, we're already in the problem. I think that the idiosyncratic, fascinating, creative, religious expressions coming out of the Israeli secular community might actually have value religiously for us.
I agree.
And I think that if we recognize that and recognize that these are not alien, Christological, or, you know, quasi-Buddhist invasions into Judaism, but actually expressions of the Jewish spirit, and expressions of the Jewish spirit brought to a sovereign Jewish land and experiencing and trying to bring their methodologies and tools and music and all, you know, and art and these different forms into actual, authentic, true Jewish expression. I think only when we religious people recognize that perhaps we're not coming with the full wagon and they with the empty wagon, but there are two very full wagons that together can create something very special and unique and unprecedented in Jewish history. Only then will engagement really happen. I think that's the only model that can work in the long run.
I just want to say that I think that in terms of the analogy, it's appropriate for us to want to share our wagon. And whether we appreciate, as you mentioned, the valuable goods that exist on the other wagon, I think it's appropriate and important for us to share our tradition of learning and our knowledge and text. All of that is desirable. The question is whether it's welcome or not. And in fact, it takes some wisdom to understand what forums, to try to find forums within which it can become welcome. I relate back to my own experience in the Midwest in a small Jewish community where the way to have impact on other Jews was simply to live with them. And I think that's the least threatening is when you come with a kippah and the person doesn't know you or in religious dress, so why should they listen to you? Why should they have any interest in having anything to do with you? On the other hand, if you live together and you're at the, people don't have laundromats anymore, but if you're waiting for your wash together or you're going to the same sporting event, you're in the same lines in the store, the same neighborhoods, conversations come up. And the problem, again, is that we don't send to the same schools. We don't live in the same neighborhoods. We don't go to the same cultural events. So where is there for us to meet each other that's not artificial? And I think the big problem is that connection between the two communities is ultimately very artificial and forced. And no one wants an artificial and forced relationship where you feel like you're being proselytized as opposed to a sense of general community that we're speaking. Everybody likes to have we call it schmooze. Everybody likes to have a conversation. But when it's proselytization, which is what is felt in many of the situations, the few situations where you have contact with learned and focused and excited religious people and non-religious people who may or may not have an interest in the religious tradition in different fashions, the forum simply doesn't exist.
I'm actually going to just cut in here and do a follow-up. David said, even I am working from within the religious community. I appreciate that compliment. Even me, yeah. So given that you've described me that way, I will now pose a religious hypothetical. Let's play devil's advocate here for a second. So this is all very nice, but traditionally Judaism looked at its truths as true. In other words, I know that sounds tautological, but as non-negotiable. In other words, it isn't just that there are two wagons. There may be like variations of two wagons, but there's a wagon. And that wagon is called halakha, and that wagon is called binding obligation, and that wagon is called avodat Hashem. So my question is, when you talk about engaging all parts of a society, are you engaging them? Your suggestion, David, was like lichatchila. It sounds like a sort of non-halachic or non-traditional approach would actually be a legitimate form of reinvigorating Judaism. And I assume you're also saying that because you see the sort of Zionist experiment as revolutionary, as radical, as a sort of new era in Jewish history. And what that would mean, I'm trying to think through the implications here, is that we're really talking about a whole new way of looking at Judaism, like a completely new commonwealth, in fact. Because otherwise, it just sounds kind of patronizing. Like, isn't it nice that they're doing sort of Jewish things? But because I'm saying traditionally, we did not look at these things as like alternatives, as options, as, oh, that's okay Jewishly too. So what I'm asking is, how do we reconcile the idea that Judaism does in fact judge, does in fact say no, that is not acceptable, that is an avira, after all, what are we doing on Yom Kippur when we're tapping our chests? Are we saying that in fact we're just hiding that fact for expedience sake because we don't want to be hated by the other? Or are we saying, as you're suggesting, that we need to actually change Judaism proper from the foundation up?
Yeah. So one of the things I said in my first comment is that there's no serious thinking about how to understand modernity in the religious world without being apologetic. And I think that's where you're coming from, to say, well, we have a tradition that says X. To deny that is simply apologetic. It's not authentic. And I think that's very important. And I think a lot of the organizations and people that are looking to understand modernity often give far too much in terms of authenticity. One of the issues that needs to be dealt with is precisely what you mentioned. We're discussing this over Shabbat, that the notion of chiloniyut, of being a secular person as a religious identity within Judaism, still has not been defined. In other words, we have certain halachic categorizations for people which ascribes a certain status, ascribes certain level of responsibility. Are you doing a sin? Are you doing a mitzvah? Are you doing neither? And one of the few people who's tried to address that, but I think needs revision, is the Chazon Ish, who tried to take a category that exists in the Talmud, the category of Tinuk Shenishba, as someone who was raised outside of society, and said that's the closest paradigm that exists in the Talmud. I think it's creative. I think it's insufficient. I think that the whole notion of someone who doesn't buy into the system is something that needs to be explored creatively within halakha. I think another thing that needs to be understood in terms of what value we place on other expressions of Judaism is contextualization. Our vision of halakha is this overarching structure that defines value and worth of everything Jewishly, I think is somewhat artificial. I don't think that it's something that is true to the original text. There are many people who do all sorts of valuable acts that, from a Jewish perspective, that may not be in line with a specific manifestation of halakha. I know many religious people who most of their activity is not in line with Jewish value and yet keep halakha. I think it's important for us to take a broader view. I mean, I think the issue, again, is the thinking, is not so much the facts on the ground, but the fact that we're not looking to Judaism in what should be a more authentic way than we are now, but rather looking at it in a very small, ritualized fashion, so much so that we are the spokesmen, those of us who keep mitzvot masiot, that go through the motions, were somehow on a tremendously higher level than those who do not, when in fact it's one aspect of value in Judaism. It's an important, and I say to anyone, if you want to reach your full potential, I think that mitzvot masiot for a Jewish person is an ultimate necessity. But it doesn't mean that it outweighs every other manifestation of Jewishly valued behavior, thought, whatsoever.
I was once asked the following question: what do I think about egalitarian minyanim? And my instinctive, unthinking response, you know, where like fully, you know, without getting into particulars, but egalitarian minyanim, my immediate response was, I'm against them in Chutz La'aretz and in favor of them in Israel. And then later I had to figure out what I meant. What it turns out that I meant was that the act of creating a sovereign life and a sovereign Jewish state is the invocation of an ancient category of life. It is in part hurtling forward into a modern, into modernity, into the nation state, into democratic governance, into a modern economy on the one hand. At the same time, it's putting up, pressing the hold button on 2,000 years of rabbinic development and re-tying into what it means to be fully alive as a community responsible for its own affairs and its own culture. And in that circumstance, I believe Judaism does have to rethink and does have to flourish and become very creative and re-engage ancient categories with modern living. I think that it's going to happen whether we want it to or not. I think that the rethinking of Jewish spirituality is going to happen in Israel whether we want it to or not. And because there's a lot more secular Israelis than there are Orthodox Israelis, it's going to be a much bigger phenomenon than those parts of Israeli society that are traditional as we understand it. So we can not like it or like it, but it's going to happen. And to say that's not Judaism, at some point it's just going to be a false statement.
Let me first of all say that I believe that a good part of the problems which we have on a very pragmatic basis is the fact that orthodoxy in general is not an example to the Israeli society. There is too much going on in that society, whether it is corruption, financial matters, other issues, just ben adam l'chaviro, between man and his fellow man, where we are failing to stand out as a dogma, as an example to the Israeli secular world. Again, I indeed agree that I don't know how many secular Jews there are actually around in Israel. The percentages are much smaller than what the media make up, and that's a whole story on itself. I do agree very much with the speakers before that we really need to rethink the whole Jewish tradition all over again without losing the essence, which is far from easy. We lack bold ideas. Orthodoxy is years behind. The big people today who are thinking in a creative way about the Jewish tradition are nearly all non-Orthodox. In Israel, we have today, and I think it is a tremendous blessing, loads of non-Orthodox organizations, schools, or whatever it is, who are sitting over the Talmud and study the Talmud, the Midrash, and whatever else it is. We have in Tel Aviv, we have in Yeshivat Chilunit, made out of people who are learning more or less the whole day about the Jewish tradition without a kippah on their head, and are fascinated by the stuff which they read, and they suddenly realize there is much more to this Jewishness than what their grandparents ever told them about. So there are many issues here. I also believe that we have to find a solution, far from easy, with the reform and the conservative movement in Israel. We must be able to work together with them, purely because there is so much at stake at this moment, and there are so many things where we do agree with each other, however many disagreements there may be, and I believe there is a way of doing that. It definitely means hard work and really thinking about all of this, and it will not be done overnight. Last point is that I feel that the halachic authorities today are out of touch at all with what is actually going on, what the needs are. We need to create a different kind of posek and different kind of halachic personality who is able to pasken, as we say in Hebrew or in Yiddish, to lay down the law, which requires much more knowledge of a lot of non-Jewish issues, first of all, secular knowledge, psychology, whatever else there is, and to understand what is the general sociological situation of the Jewish people around in the world. And I can tell you for sure that most poskim have not the slightest idea what this is all about. These are things which radically need to change if we want to really to make and have an input in Israel in a positive sense of the word.
I guess it's fair game at this point to ask all three of you to try and be more specific. Since all three of you have articulated that you feel there needs to be creative change, radical change, and so on, and that, I think, is, you know, may or may not be generically true, but at some point, it's worth asking, what do you mean? And some specifics would be helpful there.
I'm prepared to give a few examples. I believe that, first of all, in Israel, we should, first of all, create some kind of infrastructure where religious and non-religious Jews are able to come together. I call that, for the lack of a better word, tents of Avraham Avinu, tents of Abraham, where they can study together, first of all, on a very pragmatic level, the mitzvot ben Adam lechaviro, between man and his fellow man. That speaks to both societies. Everybody's interested in better ethical behavior, and we have a tremendous tradition out there, much greater than what we can find anywhere else, where we can show guidance to this. And we are lacking to do this because we're constantly emphasizing Shabbat and Kasherut instead of doing that where we do agree. And there is a lot where we agree with the secular community because they're looking for that as well. Secondly, I believe that the whole yeshiva system has to be changed in the religious world. It is not possible any longer just to continue to learn the whole day Talmud and not understand what this Talmud is really saying on a basis of ideology. For example, nobody speaks today anymore about the fact that we Jews have a mission in this world. We are called the chosen people. That means to say we need to be a light to the nations. What does that mean? We don't discuss these matters, not with our children, not with our Bachurei Yeshiva. They don't know a thing about that. And by the way, they have neither any clue, most of them, what it means to be religious. I have very often Bachurei Yeshiva Friday night at my table, and I ask them, tell me, how many years have you learned in Yeshiva? And I'm in favor of Yeshiva. My children go to Yeshiva. My grandchildren go to Yeshiva. But tell me something, how many years were you there? 4 years, 5 years. How many tractates of the Talmud did you learn? Well, I learned this tractate and that tractate. I said, okay, so you know a lot about it. So ask me, I will ask you one simple question. Imagine that a non-religious Jew or a Gentile comes to you and asks you, so why are you religious? What would you respond? My dear friends, 90.99% has not the slightest clue what to answer. And then I say to them, you've been learning for years in yeshiva, religious texts, and you can't tell me what it means to be religious and why you are religious. That means there's something basically wrong with that kind of education. If we don't show them that we have a mission in this world, that we are there, not just for ourselves, but for others, and that people get the feeling like, yes, I have a real meaning in my life as a Jew, as long as we don't push this idea, and I think it could easily be done, only if the Rosh Yeshivot and the people in the yeshiva world and in the high school world would give this more attention, it would change in many, many ways what it is all about. Last point I will make, and I won't go into any details, but as long as it is possible that one religious party is now getting again a man as its leader, who has been sitting in jail for a few years, and now is being told that he should again start to run this particular kind of party, I find this so incredibly scandalous. And I find it so incredibly scandalous that one of the greatest halachic personalities today in the Sephardi world stands behind that and pushes this idea. This is, for me, a tremendous chilul Hashem, and the amount of damage which it does to the Jewish tradition is unbelievable.
I'm glad that we're not naming any names.
I think we need to rethink what we mean when we use the word Torah. I think we need to look at our tradition of texts and recognize that it is not a uniform tradition of texts, and that what actually happened over the last 3,000 years was that first we had things like the Tanakh, which is a mixture of genres that include prophetic statements, stories, poetry, proverbs, and laws. And then we had another period where we had the Mishnah, where we had memorized statements of wisdom of many, many different subjects. And then we had a period where laws became, you know, they became the Talmud, which became this vast sea of this war, as Rabbi Lopez Cardoza called it. Then we had the codification period, where we started to have these lists of rules that became the way you're supposed to behave. And then we had the Shulchan Aruch, and then we had the commentaries around all of these. And then we had the Hasidic stories and the Sheilot V'Tshuvot. Torah evolves in its forms, in its genres. It changes because the world develops new ideas of how to write things and new ways of approaching the questions of how to live through new forms of writing. Okay, I'm focusing just on writing, although I know it can go very beyond. I think there is such a thing as doing Torah through writing an essay, or doing Torah through writing a short story, and doing Torah through through film and through cultural products that express a spiritual essence, an eternal spiritual essence, an eternal set of values and ideas, as Rabbi Lopez Cardoza pointed out. But we cannot relate to these as secular. We have to recognize that if we continue to try to do Torah in Rashi script as a commentary on the latest set of, you know, of Psak, we've lost the Jewish people, and we only have the Torah. And I think that that's not what the Torah was for. I think it was for the Jewish people, and we have to maintain a focus of broad Jewish peoplehood in understanding what Torah needs to look like in the next century.
I just want to share a thought experiment on one foot, written up in greater detail, but to illustrate the type of thing I'm speaking about. When you deal with modernity, you're dealing with societies that are made up of multiple components, what we call multicultural society, and that exists within the Jewish community, certainly if we include our Arab brothers as well, but even without including other nations and faiths, even within the Jewish community, we're really dealing with a multicultural society. And in a political tradition, which really, according to the dominant approach, understands that the state and religion have to be tied together where it is appropriate traditionally to have such a thing as religious coercion through state apparatus, this presents a problem. This presents a problem where you have a religious perspective on government, and I hope that there will be a religious majority in Israel one day, and we'll be stuck with the problem head on of what to do when our tradition tells us to run a society and a state in a way which on some level is unacceptable in a multicultural society. So I've developed a thought experiment. You can say it's a terrible idea, many people have, but the point is to show what it means to think outside the box and the sort of problems we're addressing. So one thing that I suggested to deal with this problem, regardless of whether the majority is secular or religious, is something called corporate federalism. We're all familiar with the notion of federalism, but generally federalism is geographic, as you have it in Canada and the United States, that there are two levels of authority, one which is a national or federal level of government, and one which is a regional level of government. Many states, I shouldn't say many states, in the past there have been a number of states that have given autonomy to communities that are not necessarily geographically contiguous. Dubnos used to speak about that in terms of Jewish self-determination in Europe. I think such a system, essentially a corporate system where the religious community or communities would have authority to make most of its decisions for its own community, including judicial decisions that could not be overruled by a central Supreme Court, including taxation for their schools, including Kolelim, so that the big burden that secular society complains about, and I would say legitimately complains about, of supporting institutions that they completely find anathema and certainly unnecessary to be paid from their tax dollars will only come from within the religious community, and the religious community will also be able to shed itself from burdens from which it sees to be antithetical to its values. Some level that exists already in the school system in Israel, you have several streams, and granted there's a price to be paid, which we spoke about before, and obviously the issue of coming together in community remains an important issue, which you might say that this suggestion is problematic to. Nonetheless, the notion of granting ideological autonomy to groups that ultimately have created in Israel, as Ben-Gurion pointed out, a compromise that was a horat shaah, that was necessary in order to prevent civil war and to ensure survival. That compromise was a very messy compromise between religious ideology and a secular liberalism, which has only grown. Ben-Gurion, after all, was a socialist. He was not a classical liberal. Netanyahu, if you read his speeches, is much more of a classical liberal, and it's really speaking in the spirit of the times. Aaron Barak also, former Chief Justice. Very much differing perspectives that on some level cannot coexist. And again, my suggestion may be outlandish and impractical or something that's distasteful to some, but the point is to think in new ways. And I'm just giving you an example of what it means to think in new ways, to think outside the box, to take the bull by the horns, to realize there's serious issues that people are not even aware of because they don't think in ideological terms. But these issues have to be addressed, and they have to be addressed in creative ways.
Well, let me just take you up on that, and because I think it actually gets to the crux of the problem. If we took that suggestion seriously, aren't we in fact confessing in some ways the tacit failure on some level of the Zionist enterprise? Because what we're saying is that we are unable to create enough common denominators to really create a founding mythos for the state. And even America, which obviously has a very diverse culture, has been able, and maybe in waning terms now, to create this mythos of American freedom, individualism, of a certain kind of morality that stems from the founding fathers, that wherever you are in America, whether you're in Iowa or Kansas or Wyoming or, you know, Princeton, that there's still a vestige of that unifying factor that everybody makes everybody feel like they're an American, and that's the great American experiment. If we say that in Israel, it's failed. Right? Hilonim can't talk to Haredim, can't talk to religious Zionists, that the guy in his hilltop in, you know, Shomron can't talk to the person in Tel Aviv. So we're all just going to grant them sort of, you know, autonomy with tax benefits and so on. So aren't we in fact saying that we could not really create a Jewish state, and that in fact we're just going to have to move to the next level?
Right. So first of all, this is a disappointment. For more than anyone else, I think the religious Zionist community, who sees the state as a manifestation of divine will and a unification of Jewish society as a very important value in and of itself. I think that's true. The point to remember is, first of all, when we speak about a federal system, the United States is a federal system, and in spite of very serious regional differences, there remains a national ethos. And I don't think that necessarily by moving over to a federal structure, you are denying any commonality between the different elements. From my perspective, I see Israel, if it were to follow such an approach, as really treading the path of the future. I think multiculturalism is not something that's valuable only in the Jewish context. I think in Islamic and Jewish contexts, where you have a total culture which includes the state, it's more pressing and more necessary. However, I think that ultimately the great experiment that it's as it's called, the great political experiment of separation of church and state in the West and in the Christian tradition, it's not clear that in my mind the jury is still out, and appreciating and allowing people to live within their value systems which are strained to the point of violence in some places, is not the way to go. By forcing people to find commonality when there is no commonality is counterproductive. It doesn't bring people together. It pushes people apart.
That's a lot to respond to, so I'm going to maybe go around a different corner. I want to tell you about a parliament in a swimming pool. My father-in-law is a very, very secular Israeli from Haifa. And if you know about Israel a little bit, to be a very secular Israeli from Haifa means you're off the charts anywhere else in Israel. But he's basically the current day version. If you remember, 60 years ago, people had grandfathers who were super secular and would sit and learn Talmud on Shabbos smoking a cigar. Right? You know that image of the ultra secular, but I got to learn because that's what a Jew does? So the modern today version of it is the parliament in the swimming pool. On Saturday mornings, my father-in-law goes swimming, being a good secular Jew from Haifa, and he goes swimming together with a whole bunch of other people, all of whom are older than he is. The average age is around 140. And at the end of their swimming pooling, they come out of the pool, and then they sit around next to the pool, and they talk about Parshat HaShavua. Okay? It's an image that needs to stick with us because there is a very powerful part of Israel that is very interested in theory, in the commonality. In theory, they're interested in being together with even ultra-Orthodox Jews and religious Jews. In practice, they can't stand them. So at the very least, they're going to join into the Jewish tradition and to create a life that is Jewish through that kind of an engagement. And it's really, really important because Israel is a country across the board that is driven by a Jewish spirit, which is to say a desire to be good. Okay, and when the ultra-Orthodox are being a bad example, it's because there's an audience that's looking for a good one. Okay, no Israelis, very few Israelis at least, have given up on the idea of good people and of good Jews and of us creating a good society. On the contrary, it's the frustration that it's not coming from the religious that's driving many secular Jews to try to create that idea on their own. So I'm not at all giving up on the sort of more unified Israeli society and a Jewish society emerging out of the Zionist experiment. Perhaps the forms are going to alter, perhaps the electoral system will change, but ultimately the society and the values that are driving it are really, really, really successful as a Jewish experiment.
Yeah, I agree with a lot of what was just said. Let me add a few things because people are always asking about that. Can Israel, should Israel, even by halachic standards, become some kind of halachic state, or call it a theocracy, or whatever name we would like to give it? The answer is, on a halachic level, and also on a pragmatic level, this is completely and totally impossible, and it would be a disaster if it would actually happen. And there are many important thinkers in the field who say that halacha would not even allow for an halachic state at this stage, purely because the majority of the Jews in Israel would not agree with that. There is another thing which is an ongoing debate in Israel, especially in the more academic circles, and that is, can democracy, and we are a democratic Jewish state, these two words, democracy and Jewish, do they go together or don't they go together? And you have an enormous amount of different opinions about that, if Judaism is in favor of democracy or it is not in favor of democracy. My answer to that is that these are questions which are at this stage completely unanswerable and not even required. What really needs to be done is that, yes, we need democracy and we need also the Jewish tradition. And you will have to find somewhere a modus vivendi between the two without going into principles of how to do that exactly. I think Israel actually does quite well. I mean, it is still a very Jewish state in many ways, and the Jewish tradition plays an enormous role there, and at the same time, democracy. And I can't at this moment see that much of that can be changed. And in fact, it is probably good, because as long as both these values are available, it allows for many people to somehow fit in and also feel that there's a Jewish identity or a Jewish dimension to their lives, and there is a democratic dimension to their lives. You cannot have a religious state of Israel in Israel. You can neither have a secular state in Israel. There has to be something in between. What that is and how that works, I think the practical side will answer that question, not the philosophers and the people who are sitting there and trying to find a real solution to it. It just won't happen. I would also make the following deeply religious remark. The question about religion in Israel and if all Jews will, yes or no, become religious is actually the problem of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and not of me. Yes, he on the end of the day will have to, he created the situation, he created the complexities, he created the many problems and so on. So let him solve it. I mean, we cannot solve everything for him. On the end, we have to do something on our own where we are able to do that. But today what is happening, especially in the religious parties in Israel, who play a very bad role in my opinion, is that they want to play God. They basically are saying, you know, we are the people who are here to solve God's problems. That's not at all the issue. As far as I'm concerned, and I know this is far off and this is a dream, I would like all the religious parties to walk out, not be part at all of the Knesset. They should work. Religious people should somehow work behind the curtains of all the different parties on the left side and on the right side and try to influence that. Ben-Gurion made a very smart move when he brought the whole of religion into the state and under the authority of the Knesset, including the chief rabbinate. By that he basically manipulated the whole situation. Was an incredible, clever move from his secular perspective. But the truth about it is that it doesn't work. The chief rabbinate today is a big laughter. It has nowhere anything anymore to say. It does not add anything to Israeli society. And Baruch Hashem, like we heard this morning, Zohar and people like that are doing a much better job. But we also have to be humble and to say, we cannot solve everything. Let's make the best out of it. And we are actually not doing so bad, in my opinion.
So that strikes me as very Jewish. We spent an hour and a half discussing something, and then at the end somebody says, well, let's just leave it in God's hands. So I want to thank everybody on the panel. Please give them a warm hand.